Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Community Podcast, episode number 17. My name is Jonah Vella, and along with my co-host, Steve Pallas, we'll be talking all the latest in the world of grassroots sport. G'day, Steve. A big welcome to you.
G'day, Joe. How are you going today?
Oh, I'm very, very well, mate. We've got a bumper show for the listeners out there today. We're going to be talking to Cameron Smith from the Morning Stars Football Club about diversity in sport. He has got an organisation that deals with a lot of different ethnic and cultural backgrounds, so it'll be really interesting to talk to him. And we've got our world-famous top nine in today's top nine, a little bit left of field, sponsorship ideas with a difference.
Sponsorship ideas with a difference, Joe. It's our listeners and readers' favourite topic is sponsorship ideas. But I thought before we go into that, I'd just ask, how are you going with the writing of the book and the online training?
Good question. For the listeners out there, we're doing some publishing at the moment, and we're publishing an ebook on social media, and also we're looking at certain aspects of social media, such as Facebook, the tools, Twitter, these kind of things, and we've written the ebook first draft at least, and we're also got the online training first draft happening as well. So, you know, we're not too far away from having an ebook and a online training module on social media out there for everybody involved with sports community, which is fantastic news.
Yeah, it is, and it's coming from a little bit different direction, Joe, rather than just talk about the applications themselves. But we're applying it to how clubs can use it to achieve their objectives, which is pretty cool. But Joe, I got the second, the first lot of editing back of our attempt at writing the book, and it's not insignificant. It's 17,000 words, so it's a lot of words we put together in the first about 80-90 pages or something it was on Word. Not many lines of text came back without an edit, Joe.
Well, look, I think for everybody out there, this ebook is what it means in, for those of you who have not heard that term, it means that you'll be able to go to our website and you'll be able to download a document to your phone or to your computer or to your e-reader, and you'll be able to read all about social media and how you can use it to help you achieve your club's objectives. And the same with our online training. We're planning that so you can come to our website and you can basically undertake a course at your leisure online, and we'll walk you through all the principles of social media and how they apply to your clubs.
Brilliant. But the other thing, Joe, that helps clubs achieve their goals is grants.
Absolutely.
And as we do every week, we look at the grants that are opening, and there's one coming up, quite a significant one coming up out of Queensland. So for our Queensland clubs, there is the Get Out, Get Active grant program that's opening in the next week or two. So at the early June, it opens. And you can check out all the information on www.sportscommunity.com.au and then click on the grants tab. But this one, Joe, it's a $200,000 grant pool, which is to promote or to create strategies and for clubs to create initiatives that improve the women and girls' lifelong participation in sport and active recreation. So Queensland government will contribute $20,000 per project. So they'll be looking for 10 projects that aim to increase women and girls' participation in sport. So a fantastic grant, which you can see all the grants. I think there's about 70 of them open on www.sportscommunity.com, and then click on the grants tab, Joe.
Fantastic. Next cab off the rank, Cameron Smith, Morning Stars, a football club. You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Jonah Vella and Steve Pallas. If you've missed a couple of our episodes, why not visit our website at www.sportscommunity.com.au. And there you'll find all our previous podcasts that you can download. And while you're there, give us a review so you can help spread the news about Sports Community and its services to the grassroots sports clubs. Okay, as mentioned at the top of the show, we've got a very special guest with us today. His name is Cameron Smith. He is the president of the Morning Stars Football Club. Welcome to the show, Cameron.
Thanks very much.
G'day, Cameron. It's Steve Pallas here. How are you going?
Yeah, well, thanks, Steve.
Now, I had the great pleasure of meeting you at the recent Sports Without Borders conference, and you were telling me the story behind the Morning Stars Football Club, and it captivated me, and I've spoken about it quite regularly in the couple of weeks since. So, do you want to for Joe and our listeners just give us a little bit of background to the Morning Stars Football Club and who plays in it and that sort of thing?
No worries. Well, we've got basically we started with a whole heap of the West Papuan community that are here in Melbourne, and I'll just inform your listeners that. That they arrived, or most of them arrived, on an outrigger canoe in January of 2006.
Wow.
And they went through the whole process of going to Christmas Island and in the detention centre there. And they basically are a Christian country, and there was a lot of church people, particularly from St Hilary's in Kew, who were willing to billet them and look after them while they were settling in.
Yep.
And, yeah, basically, and my parents were involved in that. They had one girl there for a couple of years. And through that whole process of... I just got to know a few of the boys, and they were playing soccer with the St Hilary's church team in the Victorian Churches Association, and... It was actually their idea to have a club of their own, to start a club of their own, and because they had enough of the guys who were interested in soccer, and they played a bit of park soccer and that sort of thing. But and so I put my hand up to sort of help them organise that, and with a bit of footy background that I've got with playing with a few footy clubs. And a little bit of experience with soccer, so I put my hand up to sort of do the admin sort of side of things.
Yes.
And then, yeah, sort of went on from there for the first couple of years. We were known as Kateka Putra, which is a West Papuan term, and then we changed to West Papua United for a couple of seasons. And then we sort of started to grow. And so now we've got two teams, and we've got representatives from 12 different countries now.
Wow.
And so from all over the world, basically with some French guys and some Colombians and Mexicans and Ugandans and Vietnamese boys. And so, yeah, we sort of focused in on some of the high-rise commissioning flats to get some players in the Collingwood, sort of Fitzroy, Richmond area.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that's where we're at the moment. So we've still got about 15 or so West Papuans playing with us. We've got a list of about 50 now.
Wow.
And yeah, we've got a team in Division 2 and a team in Division 6
so,
in the Victorian Churches League. So it's all going well.
Wow. So when you started to I guess, diversify your membership a little bit and approach... the different communities within the commission houses or commission estates, how was that received by those kids? Oh, and just for our listeners, what age are the players?
We've got a range of we've had 16-year-olds playing with us, so there's no age limit in the Churches League.
But, that's open competition.
But yeah, but it's mainly adults. So
yeah,
we didn't want the kids who were younger than 18, they could actually play, so could play quite well and hold their own.
Yes.
Because we didn't want to really, put them in danger of being hurt.
Yes, yeah.
So, yeah, our range of ages, from 16 to 40,
yeah.
Basically.
Okay.
And look, in the West Papua community, they've sort of got their issues with healthy lifestyles and being punctual to games and not having money to put on their phone or not having money to put on their MyKey card to get to training. So there's been quite a few obstacles like that. I'd probably relate it fairly similarly to the Aboriginal communities here.
Yes.
And so there's been a sort of an education process involved in all that. And it's been quite a balance to really get participation happening, you know, on a consistent basis. That versus having a, you know, a logistically easy to organise, you know, football club, which is where we want people to communicate whether they're available or whether they're running late. And also, you know, finances has been an issue as well, in which is an ongoing one, really.
Yes.
And in fact, I'll let you know that Sports Without Borders have jumped on board actually since that conference and given us a grant of $750, which is really helpful. It's going to pay for the registration of some of the boys, and the City of Yarra have also been really quite helpful as well in helping us with a facility to play at and a training ground that's actually got lights, and so we can actually train, you know, in during those winter months where it gets dark.
Yeah.
And so they've helped us out with a grant as well, and so that's been a real boost for the club.
So how did you actually make contact with people within the estates? Did you go just directly to the residents?
Yeah, I went through the City of Yarra.
Yeah.
The local council, and they put us on to some youth workers there, and some of the other interest groups there, with, you know, focusing on the migrant communities, and yeah, we just sort of sent emails and made phone calls and that sort of thing. And I actually wasn't aware that the Sports Without Borders were able to sort of assist us financially. It's been a real help, obviously. Because we're treated the league sort of gives us a little bit of a discount for some of the players as well, that you know, that are unemployed and or on welfare benefits, or have got, you know, who are students, a lot of them are studying, and so, you know, their financial income is compromised to a point, and so that's been a pretty big issue, because, you know, we do have, you know, fees to pay and for referees and all sorts of stuff like that. So so we're just getting there, and I'll be applying for a few more grants for next season, and we're hoping to expand to have a women's team. We've got a bit of interest for a women's team, and maybe even some junior teams as well. We sort of put a little bit of a request out of just finding out if there's some kids that might be interested, because we've had, when we were training near the we were training next to the Fitzroy Town Hall for a while there, and that's right next to the Brunswick Street flats, and we had all sorts of kids coming over and wanting to participate, and we'd let them train with us, you know, some of them were just obviously a bit too young to play with us, so it would be great to have a junior team as well.
Wow.
Cameron, Joe here. Given the financial restrictions that you mentioned before, just some of the basics, how do the guys afford boots and socks and shin pads and those kind of things?
Yeah, well, they've had to sort of pay for their own, really. So we've sort of got a membership fee structure that you know, is differentiated for different people's income, and basically we've just tried to keep it as low as possible. So there's some clubs out there that ask their players for, you know, between $500 and $2,000 for a year. And we just want to, you know, we're a not-for-profit organisation, so and really mindful of the guys paying as, you know, as less as possible to play the game that they love, and yeah, so our fees for those guys are about $120 for a year. And jeez. And also at the Sports Without Borders conference, the beauty of going to things like that, I was chatting to a guy from Boots for All.
Yep.
And so we're in the process of ordering some boots for some of the players who have got boots that don't fit and boots that are falling apart and that sort of thing. So, So
it'd be fair to say that if there's any organisations out there that are looking for to show some goodwill, that you'd be open to any kind of donations in terms of equipment or boots or those kind of things.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, most of the guys have just got one pair of boots, and we play on, obviously, if you're, you know, your football or your soccer, you know, sometimes you can play on a muddy pitch. Sometimes we play on a synthetic pitch. Sometimes we play on a pitch which is okay, and we've got blokes falling over because they're not wearing the right boots. So ideally, you know, it'd be good to have a variety of that sort of thing to help with their performance and so on. And look, you know, with the grant that we got from the City of Yarra, we spent a lot on getting some shin pads and getting some uniforms with, you know, with socks and so on. So to be completely honest, it was getting a bit hard to for the old nose when I'd put the socks in the washing machine and you know, having 20 pairs of socks after a muddy game. I just have sympathy for my mum when I was playing.
Yeah, absolutely. Apart from the financial burden, what have been some of the other challenges that you've come across as setting the club up and now growing the club?
Yeah, well, I sort of touched on it a little bit before. It's more in terms of communication. That's been a really big challenge. So we established a Facebook page, and we asked, you know, fairly early in the week who's available for the game the following week. And now that we've actually got training happening a lot more consistently, the players can just tell us if they're available at training, because some of them don't have the internet except for on their phones, and then all sorts of issues, you know, relating to the communication side of things there. But we really want to promote a culture you know, having respect for you know, for the people that are organising the competition for you, and you know, even having respect for your teammates with. You know, if you're running late for a game, and you know, we appreciate these things happen, but we also appreciate that we're just playing to have fun and enjoy ourselves, and but at the same time, we want to put ourselves in the best situation to try and do our best and you know, win games of football.
Absolutely. Yeah. When you start off with just the West Papuans. I'm sure there's still challenges between that group of individuals like there are in any team, but as more and more nationalities join the team and join the club, how did that go? What was that experience like?
That's an interesting point, because we've got we've got the two teams at the moment, and look, basically our group of South Americans have come in, and look, there's a lot of players at a very similar standard. We've basically only got one of the West Papuans who's playing in our senior team at the moment, and a few of the other ones aren't quite into the whole training every week and you know, working on tactics, and so they're just quite happy playing in the reserves, which means, you know, We really want to encourage people to come to training, obviously,
and sure,
so they can work on a number of strategies and improving their fitness and all the sorts of things that we want to encourage to help you know, make us a better team and a better club in the future. So there's almost a little bit of a click, I think, you know, sort of being established between the two teams at the moment.
Yeah.
But that's the challenge for our leadership committee. We want to, and it's basically, look, one of the guys in particular is sort of one of the leaders of the group, and I think if he decides he wants to perform at his best, and he's had a couple of issues, you know, which I won't go into, but he's just found some employment now, and you know, he's sort of turning the corner a bit with things in his life, and but he's not fit at all, and you know, would struggle in the senior team. So over the next month, we sort of want to encourage him, and then get these other West Papuans to really be challenging for our senior team. And we've got a squad of about probably 15 for the senior team who are, you know, vying for selection every week and pushing each other hard to do their best. But we sort of want that squad to be sort of 20 or 22.
Sure.
And that will allow us to be a little bit more competitive, we think.
Absolutely. Off the pitch, from the social perspective, does the club have club rooms and social gatherings, or is it more come out, train and play, and then head back? And
yeah, well, that's another one of our challenges. Like, basically, our social events have been restricted to sort of a pre-season sort of season launch, where we have a barbecue and we generally find if there's food around, then the people will come.
Yeah.
And an end of season presentation night where we have, you know, awards obviously for the best and fairest and the best clubman and you know, the Golden Boot Award and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But we're looking at having just occasionally at some of our games we've got some of the West Papuans coming down with their ukuleles and guitars and so on. It creates a really good atmosphere.
Yeah.
And that's just never been organised. So we're thinking of having a gala day which focuses on the West Papuan culture, have some West Papuan food and... Sorry, the mailman just drove past. I'll say that bit again.
No, that's all right. Yeah. West Papuan food.
So we're looking at having a gala day where we focus on the West Papuan culture, where we have some food and games for the kids and some music. We're actually pretty lucky to have I don't know if you know David Bridey, who's from the band My Friend the Chocolate Cake.
Oh, sure,
From the 90s and Not Drowning Waving, and he's been a massive advocate for West Papuan issues. He was actually on the Q&A show on ABC probably a couple of months ago when the Manus Island stuff was going on.
Yes.
And he's been really supportive. He's, you know, produced a lot of albums and music with the West Papuans and letting him use his studio. And so we're trying to get him to come down and another exciting sort of part of that is I've been a Melbourne Victory volunteer for 10 or so years, and Archie Thompson, you may know, he's got Papuan heritage himself, so we're sort of negotiating with him to come down and be a part of that and take us for a training session and just give the boys a bit of inspiration, as you might expect that to be the case. So that's all in the future. And with the World Cup coming up, we want to have a couple of little social events as well.
Yeah, of course.
Around that, which sort of, we're not sure which games we're going to focus on, but possibly there's one Australian game on it, I think 7:30 on a Saturday morning. So we might have a breakfast and have that and then go to go and play later on that day. So that,
fantastic.
So and that with these little cliques that we've got within the multiple sort of communities, we really need, like, the guys get along well, but we really want to establish that a little bit further, and even just having a little end of season trip is on the agenda as well.
Wow.
So that the boys can get to know each other a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, for other clubs that not find themselves in the same situation, but had the same opportunity that you had, and whether it be groups of refugees in their community or whatever the situation,
yep.
How would you suggest, from your experiences, how would you suggest that those clubs start to engage with their the refugees and to open the doors and, I guess, open the discussions, first of all? What can we learn from your journey so far?
I'd suggest going through, finding some quality people, some leaders, giving some positive, feedback and sell the idea to the leaders of the community.
Yeah.
And it's a bit of a no-brainer, really, because there are just so many benefits that can be reaped. So, obviously we're trying to incorporate arts and sports and
music,
and just really promoting the values of our society and getting them, involved in seeing that. And that's where the leaders are important, so that they can model that to some of the other guys as well.
Did you meet with any resistance along the way, or was it just...
Sorry, what was that?
Did you meet with any resistance along the way, or was it just, here's an opportunity to play sport, and it was embraced by everybody, or...?
Yeah, not really. Not much. Our main issue has sort of been retention of players, and because of a few of these, these guys have, and I'm just really referring to the West Papuans here, we don't understand how many issues that they have just getting looks from people on public transport or police interrogation or being discriminated against in terms of applying for work.
Yes.
It's really hard for us, us Anglo-Saxon, I guess, people who are the majority here in Australia to appreciate that. But I just encourage people to try and, think about what those issues are and put on the shoes of those guys. It's pretty sad to see, what goes on at times, but... and a lot of these guys have left Victoria to, go and work in the mines or go and work in Cairns on farms and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So we've lost a lot of, there's about 15 blokes that are awesome soccer players, don't get me wrong there, So, and good people as well. I just encourage people to, it's funny what happens when you just sort of get to know, a face. And, I always had that issue with the Aboriginal people. It was, and even if you look at, gay and lesbian people like that, people make these judgments against people without knowing, one person, And it's funny what happens when you actually get to know someone. And that's why I'd really encourage any group of people to begin a program that incorporates people from different backgrounds, because married, and I've chosen something that I love doing, which is sport. Yeah. It's funny how the barriers that can be broken down when we find a medium that is relevant to everyone.
Have you experienced has your team experienced those challenges on the pitch, or has it generally been in play, the game's been played in good spirit?
We've had a few challenges off the pitch, on the pitch, discipline wise there's a few individuals. And I'm not just talking about the West Papuans here. I'm talking about, every culture that we've got.
Sure.
That's just... and mind you, that's 10% of our, players have probably had those those sorts of issues. And we just really, you know, reinforce the behaviour of the 90%, or the even 95%, really.
Yes.
Who don't, you know, crack the get angry at the referee anyway, or or who stomp off after a game, or who, you know, in a soccer context, who get a silly yellow card for kicking the ball away in frustration. And
I'm just watching.
You know, like I'm a school teacher as well, so I sort of apply what I do at work with these guys, which is not yelling and screaming and carrying on. It's just
respect.
You know, when the heat's gone out of the battle, just, you know, a consoling arm around the shoulder and just say, look, you know, we need to, you know, think about that. We're, you know, we're playing in a Christian league as well, which you know, credit to that organisation. They really want people to be playing in good spirit and realising that we're not, you know, playing in a FA Cup final at Wembley or in the World Cup or anything like that.
Yeah.
So it's just sort of putting a little bit of perspective on it. And look, we've actually found that if we've been a bit tougher on people who do silly things, like club-imposed suspensions, and even if a bloke, let's say, swears on the pitch, for example, we send them straight off, even if the referee doesn't do that himself.
Well, who does that? The captain does that, or the coach, if the coach hears it? Who takes control of that situation? Is that the captain and the leadership group, or the?
Yeah, if the captain does hears that, then the captain will do that, or we've actually appointed a coach just recently, and he's on the same page as us, and we've got team managers as well, which is the role I sort of play at times as well.
Sure.
Who do that as well? So the boys know, you know, how far they, you know, if they step across the line, then there's going to be consequences. And you know, we have a fining system now as well. If you get a silly, you know, yellow card or a red card, we've actually got a fining system now in place, which is a little bit of a deterrent as well.
Wow. Have you seen a last question, because you've been amazingly generous with your time, Cameron, and I could listen to the stories you tell all day. Have you seen a change in, one, the players on your team, but also, two, the players, their opposition that are now playing them repeatedly over a number of seasons? Has both groups of players' attitudes towards each other changed, have you seen?
I've seen just subtle changes. Look, I mean, most of these people are really good people. In fact, they're all good people. And within the club, you know, people are accepting of each other. Probably the change that's easiest to see is the confidence in people.
Yes.
And that's just, you know, goes, filters through to, you know, their own lives, which is brilliant to see.
Yes.
In terms of the opposition teams, look, you know, the league we play in is full of very good people, and you'll occasionally get your odd, you know, person who's not very respectful, and that will happen anywhere, I guess.
Mm.
And that's always disappointing, but you know, on the whole, there's a high level of respect between coaches, officials, players, and that's to the credit of the VCFA, that's the Churches League,
yes.
Who set a pretty high standard when it comes to that, and that we're happy to be part of.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Well, Cameron Smith, president of the Morning Stars Football Club, thank you so much for joining us today on Sports Community Radio, and all the best for the future.
Thanks very much. It's been a pleasure.
You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Steve Pellis and Joe Novella, another Sports Community digital production, courtesy of www.sportscommunity.com.au. Welcome back, everyone. We've come to that time in the show where we have our world famous top nine, where we give you the top nine tips for anything that challenges your sports club. And today's top nine is all about sponsorship ideas with a difference, Steve.
Sponsorship, Joe. When I was looking at the statistics this morning from our webpage and the homepage,
right up there.
Of the top 10 most visited pages on our website.
Number one?
No, the homepage is number one, thankfully. But number 2, 5, 7, and 9 or something like that, about 5 of our top 10 pages are all sponsorship related pages. So we thought that we'd talk about sponsorship today, but we don't want to talk about it, Joe, from thanks for giving back my notes. We don't want to talk about it from a traditional perspective, which is, you know, your gold, silver, and bronze packages, which you rock up to a sponsor, and, you know, gold is signage at the ground and maybe on the uniforms and a couple of tickets to an event or something like that. We want to come at it a little bit differently, Joe, with about how you can create different sort of sponsorship packages for individual type businesses.
Okay.
And why we do this, Joe, is so that we can create more value. One of the questions that we're asked the most in training is, what's a sponsorship worth? And the answer, well, the real answer is whatever the sponsor's willing to pay.
All right, so we got top nine sponsorship ideas with a difference. And the number one, and this is in no order of importance, of course, is car dealership.
Car dealership, Joe. Now, just before I just delve into the car dealership, let me just talk about what the sponsors are looking to pay for and what can create value for you and create more money for your club. Is they're looking at the size of your audience and the ability of your club to influence that audience. So let's look at car dealerships, Joe. Now, typically when clubs have a car dealership, as a sponsor, or they approach a car dealership as a sponsor, and we're not talking about the gold, silver, bronze branding sort of sponsorships, sometimes the sponsorships will be about the car dealership bringing their cars to the event. And we see this a lot in golf, where nearest the pin, corporate golf days often have car dealerships or car sponsors that are there, and the golfers are looking around at the car. But if we turn this the other way, Joe, I mean, if you drive down the main street of just about any town in the country, some of the flashiest buildings in those towns are often the car dealership. Car dealerships are fantastic places to run a club function.
Absolutely fantastic idea.
You run a cocktail party or even the season launch, go to the car dealerships and say, right, rather than doing what we traditionally done, we're going to bring our membership to you. You know, our ability to influence the behaviours, we're going to bring all of those people to you, and we would like to have a function here. You know, we'll organise it. It might cost us a little bit, or include that in the sponsorship package. Now, if you've got 100 people, and this is coming from a number of car dealerships, quote unquote, if we have 100 people there for 2 or 3 hours drinking champagne or cocktails and enjoying each other's company and being entertained, however, could be a trivia night, it could be whatever, but 100 people that are surrounded by new cars, the car dealers tell me that they guarantee to sell 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 over the next 12 months to people that attended on that night.
Wow.
That's pretty powerful, and that's worth a lot of money, both to... Well, that's worth a lot of money to the car dealership. So that's a fantastic, fantastic way of doing something really simple and easy to generate some significant money.
Okay, number two is women's boutiques. That's shoes and makeup.
Ah, Joe, and as you would imagine, a lot of the sports that we work with are male-dominated oval-based ball sports, where the participants are in the majority male. And one of my favourite things to do in the training session where we work on sponsorship is we allocate a different group of businesses to individual or to attendees, and we say, rightio, you tell us what the sponsorship proposal you're going to create for your from your club to this business. And it always makes me laugh when we make sure that the male-dominated sports get the women's businesses. And often they look at us like we're ridiculous. But Joe, think about from another way. What if your club, regardless if it's male or female, whatever, what if your club decide to have a fashion show or a ladies' day where all the ladies of the club or the players or the partners or however the ladies fit into to your club are invited to this fashion show? Or a ladies' day where these boutiques and boutiques of town.
Fantastic.
Now, Joe, I don't like to generalise very often, but I'm thinking a room full of ladies that have been enjoying the sponsor's product of maybe a champagne provider or
absolutely
cocktail provider or whatever, they're prone to spend just a little bit of money on shoes, clothes, jewelry,
makeup.
Yeah, let's go to the next topic now, Joe. But I'm just telling it. I'm just saying, putting it out there. It's a fantastic way to engage those sorts of organisations.
Okay, number three on our top nine sponsorship ideas with a difference is bowls clubs.
Bowls clubs, Joe. I love bowls clubs. You do.
We all do. We all do. Sports community, we love them.
Yeah. Well, and we're about to deliver our first of 80 training sessions to bowls today, but. The bowls clubs of Victoria, that is. But bowls clubs are a fantastic way of social bowling. Barefoot bowls, fantastic way of engaging people for a couple of hours. Bring your sponsors down. Again, so you approach your local bowls club, say, well, you kick in a couple of dollars to our club. We'll bring our people to your club, introduce them to your club and your sport, and we'll all have a good time. And really cool money-making for both clubs and really cool social aspects.
Absolutely. And look, we've all been part of club committees. And we're not talking about, building a suspension bridge or anything of that kind of, difficulty. We're talking something that's very achievable and different that can raise you significant funds. So, get onto these. Bowls clubs, makeup. And car dealerships. And the next gem that we're going to throw at you is a dentist.
It's the reaction we normally get in the training sessions when we give the group the dentist. And they look at it and go, well...
The way I'm looking at you?
The way you're looking at me right now, Jay, which is... Actually, stop that, please. Now, there's the obvious benefit for those, for contact sports that wear mouth guards. That's the obvious one, Joe, and it makes a lot of sense to form a relationship with a dentist and get them to come to the club and talk about the values of mouth guards. And we see it every week where there's injuries, preventable injuries because players don't have mouth guards. But Joe, I'm talking more about. And it could be a doctor, or it could be a mechanic, or it could be just these core services that people, particularly new people to towns and new people to communities, don't have. So if dentists and doctors and accountants and those type of businesses get the opportunity to link in with the community through a club, that is very, very beneficial to them and can very quickly convert to revenue.
And number five is accountant, which you just touched on. So similar principle.
So yeah, very similar principle. And see, clubs are fantastic because they're full of young people, and they're full of people that are new to town, because that's where new people to town go to connect with the communities, to clubs. So about this time of the year, and it's the end of May now, is a fantastic time for clubs to be inviting their community accountants in to be. This is who we are, what we do, blah, 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 because getting ready for tax time. So, A, all their under-18s that have just coming through and now for the first time have to create their own or do their own taxes, or people new to the town are just looking for some sort of guidance as who's a quality accountant in town, is getting that endorsement from the club. So, again, a very strange sort of thought, but great sponsorship proposal can be made to accountants.
Now, the next one is a stroke of genius, Steve. This is fantastic. Right out of left field, but something that I can see straight away would would earn significant revenue for your club, and that is learn to drive schools.
Well, again, Joe, one of the things the clubs have a lot of is young juniors, either juniors coming out of the junior ranks or seniors, young adults coming into the senior ranks. Either way, they learn to drive. Either way, the clubs are a fantastic pathway to those kids that are learning to drive. So it makes sense then, if you've got a large number of 16 to 19 year olds, or a number of 16 to 19 year olds, it makes sense to form a relationship with a driving school, Joe. And you might as well get a little bit of cash along the way.
Absolutely. Number seven is the cinema and the gym, and places of those.
Yeah, yeah. Let me touch on the cinema first. There's a couple of things we can do with the cinema, Joe. We can create, well, we, again, it's the same concept as the car dealership. We can take our membership to the cinema. We can have a movie night for our membership, and I might just generalize a little bit, but if you're a soccer club, when Bend It Like Beckham came out or something like that, or an archery club when Hunger Games has come out, there's a link there. So you have a viewing night where you invite your club and your membership and the community and your sponsors and everyone to come to the cinema, and you might have two or three cinema nights a year. But a fantastic again, it's that concept of taking your membership. So again, if it's a cinema or if it's a gym, the local gym, don't just use branding. Take your players there into the pre-season and let them experience. That's what these organisations want. They want the opportunity to show your members what they can do, not just have people tell them about it. They want them to experience their facilities. And so the clubs have that opportunity.
Number eight is your local supermarket.
Well, again, we're going to look at this one from a little bit of a different perspective, Joe. Rather than just knock on the door of the local supermarket and say, we would like you to sponsor us, right? What local supermarkets have is access to very large groups of suppliers, Don's Small Goods and Coca-Cola and all those. It could be anything. And so what the message could be to the supermarket is, we'll help us get access to the suppliers. And there's lots of suppliers that are looking to trial new products in canteens and get away and get their products to replace the old hot dog and the dim sim, which I got to say I love. But this move towards health foods and healthy eating options is almost the sports club canteen is the last bastion that they can't get into. So you can use the local supermarket to help you access, or for those different suppliers to access your club. And you can go to the supermarket and say, we'll only buy our food from you, or we'll only buy our alcohol from you if they do it. So an exclusive relationship. So a couple of options there. One with the supermarket themselves, an exclusive, and two, looking and the supermarket helping to access their suppliers.
Number nine is a helicopter drop.
Number nine, number nine, the last one, which we always make a little bit different. It's my favourite concept, Joe, the helicopter drop, it's a helicopter company. What can we take to a helicopter company that's going to promote them? And so my response is always, well, let's do something different. We're not going to be able to access the helicopter company for very long. So helicopter drop. What is a helicopter drop? Well, you sell for little balls or something, little soft items. You might sell 10, or might sell 100, 200, 300, 400, 1,000 for $10. Put them all in a big bag, number them all. Helicopter flies over the club. You put a golf pin in the middle of your oval or middle of a tennis court or whatever it is. Drop it down, and the nearest to the pin wins the prize. Now, I'm not saying that everyone should access a helicopter and to have a helicopter fly over their club and drop stuff, but it gives a good example of how we can use really, really unique businesses to create really fun activities. Because if you really think about it for a moment, if you did have a helicopter fly over your club, that would be a really cool media story as well.
Okay, there are some of those, I've got to say, mate, a little bit left field, but when you roll them over in your mind, absolutely 9 nuggets of gold. There you have it, our top 9 sponsorship ideas with a difference. Thanks for joining us today. We hope you've enjoyed the podcast. If you've just tuned in and like what you've heard and you want to catch up on previous episodes or replay this one, and visit our podcast page at www.sportscommunity.com.au, where you can find all our previous episodes for download, as well as the show notes. And while you're there, subscribe to our newsletter for the latest and greatest in grassroots sports news. You can also find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, but don't just listen to the episode. Why not subscribe to our podcast feed so you get automatically updated when a new podcast is available, and give us a review so we can improve what we do. So on behalf of me, Joe Novella,
and me, Steve Pellis, thanks for making us part of your sports community.